Well, at Milliken, I made the basketball team at James Milliken University, but I did not earn a letter because we played Wesleyan University. When my name was announced over the PA system in the lineup, the Wesleyan coach objected to me playing because I had played with McKendree College. The Milliken coach was new, and he didn't have the nerve to put up a fight for me. I was eligible because a player at that time could play when he was in the academy 4 years and when he was in college 4 years. Well, that was just one little thing. I went on, did my work in college, and while I was in school, I married Miss Elizabeth Crowder before school was out and lived with her and her parents until I graduated. I was able to get my father to come to my graduation, but he was not comfortable out of Jackson County. I drove him back to Murfreesboro. I mentioned what good crops we had, and his remarks were always not as good as Jackson County. When we finally drove into Jackson County, he was a different and a happier man. When I was in college, I sent home 2 pairs of boxing gloves for my brothers and a large college warm-up sweater. Dad wore the sweater most of the time until it was in shreds. He seemed never to tire of telling of my activities in athletics while in college. Each time he told about my athletic ability, the stories grew larger and larger. As a senior at JMU, I did some advanced work in cabinet making. My wife wanted me to make a Davenport table for our living room. I made it, and one of my grandchildren have it now. Mr. Cole asked me what I was going to do after I graduated. I told him I had no idea. He said I should apply for a teaching job in Decatur. I told him emphatically no, that Decatur would not take a person just out of college without any teaching experience. Mr. Cole kept after me to apply to Superintendent Engelman for a job in industrial education. I made an appointment with the superintendent of schools for 3 p.m. on a Friday, as Mr. Cole urged. On Friday, I went to the superintendent's office to fill the appointment. Ms. Hoffer, his secretary, said he could not see me today because he had to go to Chicago on the Banner Blue at 3:20. I told that was all right, but would she please tell Mr. Engelman I was here so he would not think I did not keep my appointment. She went in and came out immediately and told me to go in to see the superintendent. For just a minute, I went in, introduced myself, and before I could say anything else, Mr. Engelman said, "Mr. Piggott, I'll send you a contract Monday to teach machine shop in the new Roosevelt Junior High School for $1,500 a year." Well, it finally dawned on me that Mr. Cole had talked to Mr. Engelman and asked him to give me a contract. Several years later, I had the privilege to give the dedicatory speech of a painting of Mr. Cole before the Alumni Association banquet held in the Masonic Temple. The painting now is on exhibit in the hall at JMU University. My school life at JMU was not very thrilling, except when I was making progress towards a college degree. Of course, I wondered what I would do after college, but my ambition was to graduate and be the first in the family to do so, and give my brothers and sister a desire to follow my footsteps. I'm sorry to say that out of the 14 children, only 2 others earned a college degree. Dad would not have stood in their way as he did in mine, but only two had the determination to finish college. I graduated from James Millikan University in June 1921 with a contract for teaching position in the fall in Decatur. Well, I had to get a job for the summer. Our next door neighbor at 553 South Siegel was a Mr. Wilmuth, W-I-L-M-U-T-H, who was a carpenter belonging to the Decatur Carpenters Union. I asked him if he would help me get a job. He said they need carpenters at Pekin, where they were rebuilding a starch factory which had burned down. I told him I did not belong to the union. He said, come to the next union meeting and he would see what could be done. I went to the meeting on the night designated. Chairman of the union sent a committee out to interview me and give me an oral examination. I passed the examination all but a chalking a line, which I failed. The union gave me a union card, dues paid up for 1 year. Mrs. Pickett's folk had moved to Peoria to live, so we made plans to live with them for the summer. I went to Pekin and talked to the foreman about a job. He asked me if I was a good carpenter. I said, no, I am not. But I could saw to a line, drive nails straight, and give him an honest day's work. He asked if I had had my tools with me, and I told him I did. He gave me a slip and told me to report the next morning at 7 a.m. Well, on this job, we built from the top floor down to the first floor. And on this job, I saw my first man fired. We were building from the fourth floor down, trying to line up the top floor with what would be the bottom floor when we had finished. Well, we put a line down from our frames to the sills below and lined it up that way. Well, the line was out about 3 inches. Mm-hmm. And I said, that'll never do. But the fellow said, oh, the H-E-double-L with it, it's all right. Well, the boss was right behind him. He just pulled out his little pad, wrote out a slip, and said, go to the office and get your time. I worked at Peach and Stark Work until Saturday before Labor Day, September 21. We went back to Decatur and moved to 400 block Powers Lane, to the Davidson home, D-A-V-I-D-S-O-N. When school started, I reported to Roosevelt High School the day before school. Mr. C.F. Carmichael was the principal. I talked to him at school, and he took me to the shop to see where I was to work. He showed me the wood shop, the tin shop, the blacksmith shop, the electric shop. Everything was new, and the shop looked very inviting. When he was through, I asked him where was the machine shop. I had a contract to teach there. He told me they didn't have a machine shop, that I was to teach sheet and metal. I told him, no, not me. I was employed to teach machine shop. He said there was no difference between the two. I said, if you don't know the difference, I can't explain it to you. I went to the public school office and told the new superintendent about my problem. He told me that they had a position of teaching 7th and 8th grade woodwork at Gassman's school basement. Well, arrangements was made for me for several of the 7th grades to go to Gassman for manual training. I also went to Durfee to teach 7th and 8th grade manual trading in the 7th grades from Ulrich and Warren School. I was asked to take a class of ungraded boys who were far behind the 6th grade level. I had tried to get these boys interested in the same project with no luck. I went to high school and asked if they had anything we could clean up for them. The principal and I looked around and we found some science tables that needed attention. I asked that 2 or 3 of the tables be delivered to the Gaspar School basement. The ungraded boys, some of them old enough to be seniors in high school, were told we were chosen to clean the tables from the high school science classes. We talked about whether we would be able to do the job or not. I told them I thought we could because they had the guts to stick to the job. We discussed how hard the task would be, and the reward would be that we would return the table to high school with some identification on the table that we had done the work. After the class discussion, we voted on whether to try to do the job. The vote was unanimously yes. We then went to the high school, picked out the tables, had 3 of them sent to us. Well, we worked on those tables off and on for about a semester. When we finished them, they really looked very good. If you think it's easy to use hand tools to take varnish and use plane on a table and try it sometime, and you'll see that it's not very easy. Teaching boys from French, Dennis, Oakland, Lincoln, who came to Gaspar once per week, was very interesting. One group of boys who shined shoes at the shoe shining parlor on Water Street were very lively and interesting. After the first few months of school, I could not walk by the place for business without getting a free shoe shine. Okay. The class, the 7th grade for Warren and Ulrich, and the 7th and 8th grade for boys from Durfee, had their classes in Durfee School. The Durfee School's group had a bad reputation among the grade school. Durfee School was the only elementary school that had a father's club. I heard very little from the mother's or father's club, although I did go to the father's club once or twice. I did not have an automobile when I started teaching, and I used a streetcar. We lived on Powers Lane, and I could walk to the transfer hall, which was located at the crossing of North Main and East Main streets. The streetcars came into the transfer house, went around the transfer house, and back the way they came. At the end of the first year of teaching manual training, I worked for the Decatur school system refinishing desks and painting classroom walls. The painting crew painted all the rooms in the old West building. We dipped the children's desks in a large container of hot varnish remover, let them stay in there until the varnish started to fall off. Then we took them out and brushed off the remaining varnish. I do not remember how much we were paid for per desk. I worked through the summer and made enough money to add to my $1,500 salary to make a fairly good living. Sometime at the end of the summer, I was called to the public school office for a conference with Miss Imbolden, the elementary supervisor. I had no idea why she wanted to see me. In fact, I hardly knew her when I saw her. When I met her in her office, we visited for a while and talked about Durfee and the other schools who sent pupils to me at Gaspar and Durfee. Out of the clear sky, she said, "Mr. Pigott, you have just been appointed principal of Durfee School." Well, to say the least, I was surprised, to put it mildly. I said, "Why me? I'm not prepared to be a supervising principal of a big school like Durfee. Well, she said, we need a man as principal at Durfee to handle the discipline. And you are the only man in the elementary school who has a college degree. She said, we will help you get started, and the teachers will help you when you need help. Of course, I was glad to get the position, and I told her I'd do my best. And if my best was not good enough, to tell me that I would turn in my keys to the office. I asked when I could get the keys to check on the organization. She told me the organization was all taken care of, and I could get everything the day we had the first teachers' meeting. I did not remember my first principal salary, what my first principal salary was, but it was more than $1,500. I remember the starting teacher salary then in 1940 was $1,325. Well, the first day of school opened in Durfee School on the Labor Day 1922. I was very nervous. I secured the keys from the public school office and opened the front door at 12:30 p.m. for the teachers to come in. All other doors were closed. I went to the principal's office, unlocked his desk, and looked for the plan organization. I was surprised to find all the plans for the principal assignment, pupil assignment, thrown in the desk in a mess. I did not know what to do. In fact, I knew so little about the school records that I was lost. Well, the question was, what should I or could I do? The teachers were coming in for their keys in their room. I said, wait until after our meeting, and they looked blankly at me and went to the auditorium for the meeting. I finally decided to tell them the whole truth about my appointment and my statement to Mr. Bowden and wait for their criticism. When I told them I knew little or nothing about supervision, about a supervising principal and what he should do, that I was at their mercy. There were only 600 pupils coming in. There were 600 pupils coming in about an hour, and I did not know whose room they belonged in. Much to my surprise, they just laughed. Then they quieted down and started giving suggestions. I did not know that the principal had been fired. He had evidently mixed things up. Their plan was to have teachers at the top of the stairway leading into the building and tell the pupils to go to their last year classroom and the new pupils to the auditorium, and the teachers in the sixth grade to help if needed. After all pupils were in the building, the teachers who had them last year, who were passed, and at the ringing of the bell, she would send her pupils on to the fifth grade teacher or the next teacher and keep those who failed. Since we had only one new teacher in the first grade, the new first graders could go to one of the two first grade rooms. It worked out fairly well, and we all breathed a sigh of relief. I complimented the teacher and thanked them for solving the organization problem. This incident taught me to ask teachers for help in running the school. They gave me many suggestions, many of them very valuable educationally. This year, the first year, we were assigned a band instructor for the school. I do not recall the number of band members, but we felt that Durfee School was fortunate to have a band music. It made us hold our heads a little higher because at that time, some thought, can any good thing come out of Durfee? Miss Kelmo and Miss Kinsella asked if their primary grades could have an Armistice Day assembly program. Of course, I said, of course you may. But can't we have it for the whole school? Well, the teacher trained the others for the assembly, and it was sure to be a success because it seemed like the whole school was getting excited about it. A few days before the program, a committee of teachers waited on me and asked me to lead the school in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag from the stage. Well, of course I will if you wish me to do it, I said. Well, that's that. Is not all there is to it. We want you to wear your naval aviation uniform. I tell them, oh, I would rather not. I feel like I would be trying to push my World War record before the children. To make the story short, I did lead the Pledge of Allegiance in a trembling voice, and my eyes were full of tears as I stood at attention while the bugle sounded. The little children were very much impressed. There were many good things that happened at Durfee. The teachers were almost unanimous in their effort to help the children. Many of the parents had gone to help the children. Many of the parents had gone through a long Wabash Railroad strike, and they were thankful for the little things at school. Because of my knowledge and condition of the east end of town, I was asked to head the drive to present to get presents for the Christmas store to help the children in the northeast part of the Decatur. We solicited items from stores and repaired broken toys at different places. I do not know whether this was the beginning of the repairing of toys by the firemen or not. A day or so before Christmas, when families were chosen, the children were taken to the stores and given a choice of the new number of gifts they wanted. To get back to the classroom, Miss Kavirs, now Mrs. Emmanuel Rosenberg, was our first physical education supervisor. She planned physical education exhibition of physical education classwork, in the Decatur Public Schools. The performance was held at Fairview Park in the spring of 1922. All grade schools under her supervision entered the PE classes. All these classes assembled at Fairview Park on Saturday afternoon and gave their review. The pupils went to the park by the way of the streetcar, buggies, bicycles, and many walked. Pupils who went to the park from Durfee got on the cars at Durfee, went south to Conduit, Conduit to Water Street, to East Main, west on from the transfer house to Main, and to one block west on Park Street to North William and to Fairview Park. The exhibition was a great success. We had need of a special teacher in teaching reading to a few teachers each hour from the primary grade. We were able to get Miss Thurston Lux, who was a Palmer Method penmanship teacher, to teach classes full-time at Durfee. About this time, we were having a special arithmetic test in the first sixth grade in all elementary schools in the system. All schools were told the test would be given on a given date. I called the teachers to a meeting and urged them to put special emphasis on the fundamentals of mathematics. We wanted to do well in the tests when they were given. The school almost had the name, Can Any Good Thing Come Out of Durfee? The test came and we were given returns to the public school office for grading. And we did very well. Three of the schools, which were supposed to do the best, all fell below Durfee's by several grade levels. One principal went to the superintendent and wanted him to look into the method of giving the test, but he refused to do so. I had a janitorial problem also, which was unusual. Some of the teachers complained to me about his sweeping and asked that I check it. I did, and I thought his sweeping was doing a good job, nothing wrong with it. But the teacher still complained. "Well, you will have to tell me and show me what's wrong," I said. She was afraid to tell me because he was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. I told her that was his business, but that his work was our business. "Well, I'll tell you if you will not tell him who told you." "I won't unless I have to." "Well, he chews tobacco and spits it on the floor ahead of the sweeping compound and does it all the time." "I'll take care of that," I told her. I went to the janitor and told him about chewing tobacco and spitting on the floor ahead of the sweeping compound. I must have talked to him at the wrong time because he told me there was nothing wrong with doing that and that it was his personal affair. I told him to discontinue doing it, and he refused to stop it. Well, I thought he would think it over and quit it, and I would check with him later. Well, the next day, the minister of the Third UB Church, Ike Summers, I didn't put Ike's name in here, came over to school and talked to me about the case. The janitor had taken the case to the Ku Klux Klan, and the troubles was headed my way if I did anything to him because of spitting on the floor. I said, "Pastor, I cannot have him doing this anymore. Right is right and wrong is wrong." I was young enough to tell the Ku Klux Klan, "I'll run the school and you run the Klan. The next time he spits on the floor intentionally, I will take his keys," and I did. I took the keys to the public school office and told them the story. I think they transferred him to another school. I did not hear anything from the Klan. We had many discipline problems, especially with truancy. In order to help this to some extent, I started a boys' club that met after school at the old office building in the Malleable Iron Company on North Jasper. The boys were not supposed to meet there but one night per week and when they had adult supervision, but some boys played around there anyway. One night, Mrs. Fedor, Henry's mother, a member of the club, called me and asked if I would find Henry for her. It was late, but I took the car and drove around the place where I thought Henry might be. I finally drove by the boys' clubhouse, honked the horn, and Henry came out to the car. I told him his mother was worried about him. He got into the car and I drove him home and let him out. Saw him go into the house and I drove home. The next morning, Henry was not at school, and I wondered why. Later in the week, I learned when I brought Henry home that night, the father took all his clothes off of him and put him in the basement. Mm. The father was sure that the windows were too small for him to get out, so he did not worry. Well, Henry was gone the next morning. Mm. But some of his sister's clothes, which were hanging on the line, were missing also. When Henry did come home, it turned out that Henry had crawled out the window, got his sister's clothes from the clothesline, put them on, and left. Henry turned out to be a fair student, and I think graduated from the high school. When I went to Durfee, there was a father's club and a mother's club. The father's club fell apart after a few years, but the mother's club became a very strong organization. They organized a milk program, a lunch program, gathered clothes for those who could not get them in any other way. Mrs. Roy Koppenbarger was a leader in this. in this type of work for many years. I had many discipline problems, and corporal punishment was permitted in 1920 and 1930. I made a paddle out of a quarter-inch walnut and smoothed the edges. The paddle made more noise than it did pain. I remember one boy told me his mother would whip me if I paddled him. I asked him if he had told his mother what he was doing in class. He said yes, and that she said he did not deserve a paddling for it. I told him to go back to class and in the morning bring his mother with him to school. He agreed to do it. Sure enough, the next morning his mother came to school with him. She told me the boy did not deserve to be paddled. I sent the secretary down to his room to stay with the children while the teacher came to the office. And the teacher and the mother talked about the boy, his actions, his refusal to obey the rule of the class, to the extent that the school could not carry on the work and so forth and so forth. I excused the teacher and looked at the mother and asked, what would you do if you were in my place or the teacher's place? She looked at me and at her boy and said, give me that paddle. The mother was a big woman. She would weigh at least 250 pounds. I gave her the paddle. She told the boy to kneel down and put his head in her lap. And she started paddling. She said, you lied to me. You did not tell me the truth. She hit him easy at first. Then she seemed to get angry, and she really laid it on him hard. The boy cried, wiggled, almost out of her lap. She lost control of herself and hit him across the rib and across the shoulder with the edge of the paddle. I was afraid she would break a rib or an arm. She was swinging so wildly. I stepped in and grabbed the paddle and stopped the punishment. But she wanted to go on. She kept saying, you lied to me. You lied to me over and over and over. That was the last time I asked a parent to paddle a child at school. Next is a school newspaper that we were asked to have. The Decatur Review invited the elementary school to furnish material and a layout plan for a weekly newspaper. The school agreed to furnish material for the school schedule for one semester to be published on a given date each week. Different school students voted to name their newspaper the Durfee Review. The issue I'm talking about was named Durfee at a Glance. On Saturday, May the 5th, 1928 issue, the picture measured 2.5 inches by 17.5 inches, printed on both sides. The picture in this edition, the Durfee pupil spelling out the word Durfee. The manual training exhibit, Durfee. There were several pictures in the paper. I'll just mention a few of them. There's a schoolroom, a large one, maypole dance, a miniature reproduction of a Faraday playhouse, soap carving, and things of that nature. The word Durfee was spelled out in pupils forming the letters in a layout 20 yards by 76 yards. There were between 1,100 and 1,200 pupils in the picture, and children from the first grade through the ninth grade are included. There were also 35 teachers in the background. The school had grown from a four-room school in 1892 to a 32-room building in 1928. The picture was taken from the top of the auditorium. The junior high school pupils of this group expected to go to their new junior high school building in 29. About this time, the new Centennial Junior High School was expected to be completed for the Centennial Celebration of Decatur. I was thinking whether to apply for the principalship of Centennial. I knew the principal of the junior high school would pay more than the principalship of the grade school. The thing that made me question the move from Durfee was the fact that there was such a good fellowship between myself and the faculty that I hated to leave. Ever since the first day of school in 22, when they took over the organization, and I did so well in the problem, solving the organization problem, I was sold on them. When he had problem after that, I checked with them and did as the majority suggested. If any teacher wanted to try and some experiments with the class, we would discuss it and what the group decided we did. I remembered one day our second grade teacher came in to me with problems. He said, "Mr. Piggott, you sent me a new pupil this morning, and I do not know what to do with him." She said, "I have only 40 desks in my room, and I have 41 pupils." "Well," I said, "that's no problem. I'll just have the janitor put in another desk." Wouldn't the teacher have a fit on that now? She looked horrified and said, "Okay, no, no, no," and walked out. I wonder what second grade teachers would do under such circumstances now. I shudder to think about it. In my days at Durfee, the teachers were sure of a contract. At the end of the school year, unless I had worked with them, and the teacher would not attempt to improve. I remember one exception to this. When the contracts came out at the end of the year, I had recommended all the teachers. One teacher came to me and asked, after the contract had been received, why she did not get a contract. I said to her, "I recommended you now, you're kidding me. It must be a mistake." She showed me a note from the elementary supervisor stating to the effect that her services would not be wanted next year. The teacher went to the supervisor, but she did not change her mind or tell her why she was dismissed. Mm-hmm. I had only one other case like that in my 38 years of teaching. Well, there is much more I should write, but Durfee, about Durfee, but I must move on. I was appointed principal of Centennial Junior High School. There was not much of a problem choosing teachers from Durfee Junior High School.
Excuse me,